This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you're interested in the Middle East, the lives of women in Islamic cultures, and the friction between tradition and westernization, I think you'll be interested in the story of my guest, Satareh Farman Farmoyan. She's the daughter of an Iranian prince, but shortly after she was born, the family's dynasty was overthrown, and Reza Pahlavi crowned himself Shah. Her father spent the rest of his life under house arrest. Her mother was one of his several wives. Satareh grew up in a harem in the family compound. In spite of all the restrictions on women's behavior, she went to college in the United States. She returned to Iran to start her country's first school of social work, devoting her life to helping the poor and the sick. But some of her own students turned against her during the revolution and took her to the authorities, telling her the Ayatollah would have her executed. She managed to escape from the country and now lives in exile in Los Angeles. She's written a new memoir called Daughter of Persia. I asked her to describe the relationship between her mother and the other wives in the harem.
You know, when I was growing up, you know, we were all children and we loved each other. We didn't know for a long time. I didn't know the difference because, you know, when I was born, that was the time that my father was imprisoned. All his elder sons were imprisoned. So my mother, who was very young when she married my father, she was 12, and she was a young woman. She was scared or went through all this hardship. So she didn't have, she was breastfeeding me. And she lost her, what they say, that her, she couldn't nurse me. She was sick. So I was nursed by my stepmother, who at the same time I was born, she had a son who is only about 10 days younger than I am. So I was breastfed by her. And so I grew up not knowing who was really my mother. So, but the relationship between the wives, they were all these four, especially the three of them, were the same age, with the difference of 1 or 2 years older than younger. So they were young and they were confined to their own andarun, that means that their own household. My father would not allow them to go outside and search for activities outside the household. So they became very good friends. They cooked together, they sewed together, they socialized together. They talked a great deal about my father, and my father was a sort of traditional man who believed that the children should be clean, the children should be educated. So they talked a lot when we were growing up together, and we really didn't know any difficulty in their relationship. I never felt. And as a matter of fact, when my father died, these wives kept on seeing each other, and they were the best friend. And one time I remember that when my stepmother, who had nursed me, died, my father, own mother grieved so much. She cried a lot and she kept on telling us that she lost her best friend and there's no reason for her to keep on going. You see, the love for each other was that much.
Did you want to marry when you were very young?
Well, I there was a lot of glamour attached, and that was the only job, only activity that they saw for girls. You see, we were not allowed to participate in politics. I mean, the girls I'm talking, we were not allowed to go to the schools like the boys did. You see, when I was growing up, all my brothers who were the same age as I was, they were all sent abroad for education when they got to be 8, 9 years old. And I stayed home because I was a woman. So, and the only destiny I had as far as they were concerned was that for me to get married and have children. And so they glamorized it in a way. And when you are stuck to a confined andarun, and all you have in the future is they talk about, oh, soon you will find somebody who will bring you jewelry, who will bring you this. You see, any young girl is sort of tantalized by that. But I was more interested in getting education. My father was an enlightened and very, I can say that he believed in education. He educated his daughters, not sending them abroad, but in the schools available. He brought us tutors inside our homes. And my elder sisters, they all had a governess, a French governess. You see, when I got to be of age, he sent me to a school outside our compound. So he believed in education. He taught us to search for education. And, you know, in the history of Iran, my father was the first man who started a school for girls in the city of Shiraz. At that time, there was no girls' school in the whole country. So he really thought of education as an activity that the girls could attend and learn, you see.
I think it's always a challenge for contemporary American women to understand what it was like to grow up in a harem. And also to understand the restrictions that were living with the restrictions that were placed on women then. I mean, the women were basically confined to the house. Were there women in the compound where you were growing up who resented it, who wanted freedoms they didn't have? Did you, when you were young, want freedoms that you were afraid you would never have?
Yes, it was. You see, my father had organized everything we needed in the compound. We had school there, we had a carpentry shop there, we had a blacksmithy shop there, we had whatever. It really was a city in itself. And so the people who lived in the compound, they didn't need to go outside. But I know that my mother was very, very mad at my father, and she never forgave my father. Even at the time that after even the death of my father, she always complained that he did not let her go out of the compound when my mother's mother was sick and died. So she didn't go to the deathbed of her mother. So that was the time that women were restricted.
Now, you described yourself as something of a tomboy when you were growing up.
Correct. Because I was growing up with a bunch of boys. There was all my age group were boys.
So did you have certain freedoms that weren't usually given to girls?
Yes, I had, because, you know, I was unruly, and I probably, my mother didn't have any playmates, girls, for me in the compound. So she just put hands like the boys on me and send me out like the boys. So I grew up in the Biruni, that is that's where the little boys were. I mean, that was up to the time that the boys had gone to Europe. So I grew up with them.
You keep using the word compound to describe where you grew up.
Yes.
It was also a harem. Do you not like to use the word harem? Do you think Americans have, like, the wrong image of what that word means?
Yes, they did. I don't want it to be associated with Hollywood. For us, it's when I say compound, because it was a very large area of land, walled in, and in it there were houses for every wife, and each house was quite large, and we all had our own garden, our own. Our house was a two-story with 6-7 bedrooms and servants' quarters. You see, the same was with others. And then in the middle of the compound was my father's house. So therefore, it wasn't harem in a way that it's pictured in Hollywood. You see, it was real life. It was like people's home. The only way that was different was that we didn't have a father inside living with us. You see, and I never thought of it differently. I thought that the whole world was like that. The father always lived in his own quarter, you see. So when we were growing up, this was not a problem for me.
My guest is Satareh Farman Farmoyan. Her new memoir is called Daughter of Persia, A Woman's Journey from Her Father's Harem Through the Islamic Revolution. We'll talk more after the short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Satare Farman Farmoyan, and she's the author of a new memoir called Daughter of Persia, a woman's journey from her father's harem through the Islamic Revolution. You came to the United States to be educated. This was for college, I think, was when you first came to the United States. What did going to the West mean to you and mean to your father, who was the one who supported your trip?
My father died when I was still in high school. So after the death of my father, I decided to pursue my education, and I came to the United States. My father, I just want to tell you about my mother. My mother was very unhappy about my decision at first, but because war broke out, this is World War II, and it took me a couple of years to get a visa and to prepare my trip. Then during that period, my mother got used to the idea. So I came to the United States in search of better education. I wanted to do something for my people. I was concerned about the poverty, the illiteracy, the position of women, and all the social problems that I saw outside the compound. So I wanted to do something, and I thought that the best thing, since we were not allowed to go to university or to school in Iran, university was very new and only for men, so I decided that I'll come to United States. So I got acquainted with the American missionaries there, and they helped me.
What made you think that you, as a woman, could do important work?
Well, I saw no difference. You know, when I thought that I ran as fast as my little brothers. I climbed the trees as high as they did. I did all sorts of things. I memorized the poem our father gave on Fridays and learned whatever our lessons. I was doing very good at school, even better than boys, and I read whatever I was supposed to do. So I said, well, I am not behind them. So the girls could do whatever the boys can do. Why shouldn't I?
Well, you went to the United States to go to college and then lived in the United States for a while, eventually returned to Iran where you started a school to train people in social work, people who would then go on and help the poor. What do you think of as being the greatest accomplishments of your school over the years?
Well, we introduced the profession of social work. You see, the profession of social work was unknown. I coined the word social worker into the Persian vocabulary. You see, Iran is several thousand years old. So that was an accomplishment. We showed people that there is a profession, that the social problems are can be solved through education. And so I think that was a big accomplishment. People, you know, took for granted. See, I told you that they were so religious that they thought that every breath that a person takes is predestined by God. So if a person is poor, she has to be like that. So it was total submission to God's will. If you were sick, that's it, that God wants you. You see, they kept on telling me, oh, don't try to do this. The future of people is written on their forehead. Well, that wasn't so. I knew that people could help themselves. Of course, I didn't deny there was a God, but I said, well, God can help you to help yourself. You see, that concept I introduced, that you can help yourself. You can go to the doctor and you can have, you know, I started the family planning program in Iran, which meant that all these women who were young and having a child every year, and they were so weak that you would think at the age of 28, they had six children. They looked to me as they were 50. So I said, well, look, you can have less children and watch you for your own health, and you will become stronger and you can do all sorts of things. And this happened. They did it. They protected themselves. They followed and they took care of their health. So women became somebody in the household, and they were not only for giving birth.
I want to skip ahead. to the late 70s, in the period right before the revolution and the overthrow of the Shah. When you could sense that a revolution was coming, what were your feelings then toward the Shah and toward his secret police, the Savak?
Well, you know, Mehmed Reza Shah, that was the Shah that during the revolution came during his time, he did accomplish a great deal for Iran. I mean, we have got to give him credit. We have Iran was changed in one generation to become a modern country. You see, we had roads, we had schools, we had hospitals, we had big military installment. But the problem was that what he neglected was the politics was not a part of everybody's life. You see, here in this country, your political system is everybody's business. But there, the people did not contribute to political thoughts. You see, they were not allowed to participate in political and planning, you see. So it was the job of the Shah and his own ministers. Therefore, I felt a great gap between the people and the administration and the Shah, you see. He couldn't understand that a human being by nature it has a free soul, and we wanted to be free in contributing to our own lives. We wanted to participate in political ways of life.
Let me skip ahead to when the Ayatollah took over in Iran and the Shah was overthrown. You describe a very harrowing incident in your book after the Ayatollah took over, when a group of students came to your door and told you that they were coming to take you so that the Ayatollah could execute you.
Correct.
What were their reasons? What did they tell you?
They were, you know, in revolution and in crisis, I have a feeling that people really think differently. They have, they are not under discipline, and they think that now, if we get rid of her, she has been the director of the school, then we can have her job. Maybe she has stolen a lot of money. We can get hold of that money. So they are not thinking straight. Everybody is thinking what we'll get. You see, a lot of people thought that if I am not there, they can confiscate my belongings, my home, you see. So they had other motives in their mind. So I was scared. I mean, I thought that they were going to send me to Ayatollah, and Ayatollah was going to kill me. But I said, well, all right, let's go to Ayatollah and let him talk to me. I felt that all my life I had been a teacher, I had been helping the poor, I had been doing what any religion wants a human being do. I didn't think that I was guilty of anything.
Well, the students told you that they thought that you and your school were serving the imperialist interests of the CIA.
Yes, they had about 10, 12 charges against me. And, you know, I had, during the 20 years of School of Social Work, I had sent many students abroad for further education. I had sent students to United States universities, to England, to France, to the Philippines, to India, to all places that I thought that the students can become acquainted with new thought, and they can bring back something of interest to Iranian community. So I had sent many, many students abroad. So the students thought that was CIA activity, you see.
When you were taken off to the jail, you heard gunshots, and it turned out those are the shots of other people getting executed.
Correct.
What saved you from being executed?
Well, because I was the first woman to be taken, I think that saved my neck, really, because the students were in such a hurry to take me the first day that when I got there, they didn't know what to do with a woman prisoner. You see, so they had me stand in this the headquarters of Ayatollah Khomeini, outside on the wall, while the men prisoners were inside and they were executed. So they didn't know what they should do for me. And then I was also lucky that number two to Ayatollah Khomeini, Ayatollah Talaghani, knew me. You see, he had heard that I was, people over there wanted to know who is this woman who is standing there for on the wall. And he heard my name. He said, oh, yes, I know her. She has been coming to the prison for all these years. She has helped the wives of the children of the prisoners. So he petitioned for me. You see, I was really lucky in that aspect.
So you were finally able to get a visa and leave the country. What's the difference between the kind of social work you're doing in Los Angeles now and the type of work that you did in Iran?
In Iran, I was educating. I was in the School of Social Work, and I was working with the government in planning and program and introducing a lot of legislation. I was doing a lot of work for social welfare planning and programming. Here, when I came to United States, I just sat in the civil service exam, and I'm doing straight social work, which is my field, and I like it a lot. It's a good thing.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Satoreh Farman Farmoyan has a new memoir called Daughter of Persia. It's published by Crown. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.